We're in a series entitled Journey with Jesus, and we're chronologically walking through his life in Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John as best we can. And we've been talking here lately about helping people find, follow, and fall in love with Jesus. And we're sort of highlighting that a bit, just to, sort of as a mission statement thought. And the find part, just to clarify some things, the find part is about an anchor in life. Everybody needs an anchor. Not that we're big boaters, sailors, or motorboaters, but there's a sense in where Jesus can become that if you let him in your life, a savior, as the Lord of your life, if you're willing to trust him. And we want people to find him. He can hold you in a storm, even though the storm is uncomfortable and unpleasant. Having an anchor is what every seaman wants to have, because it can hold them if it gets horrible, so they don't run ashore and they don't crack up. He can bring emotional safety to your life and be an anchor in that way. Where everything may be going nuts around you, Jesus can bring sanity to things. He can bring hope to your heart, to your life. His promises do that to us as we learn them and cling to them and think about them. So that's the fine part. The follow part is baby steps at first. We talk about following him. You know, we want you to try him, to taste him, if you will, to test him out. If you were going to buy a new car today, you would just buy it without riding in it. You just wouldn't do that. And part of starting baby steps following him is riding with him, getting in the cockpit seat, and you'll push him aside and grab the steering wheel back. That's what we humans do. But just start following where you can. He's not in any hurry. He's God. He just wants you. He wants your heart, certainly as you're going to see today. The fall in love part is where things begin coalescing together, where beginning faith feels good. Following, sort of, over time, months and even years, becomes kind of normal. It defines who you are. You are a follower of Jesus, and you would attest to that if someone asked. And Jesus becomes your friend here when you begin to fall in love with him. You look forward to him in your life, his presence. You want him there. You don't shoo him away as much, maybe as you did in the past. He becomes, at some point, as you fall in love with him, more important than anything. And it happens slowly. It's not a decision away. It's sort of a process that can happen in your life if you begin to make him more preeminent in your life. And then he becomes what I like to term as the love of your life. It's not your husband, it's not your wife, it's not your job, it's not your stuff, but it really becomes him. And Jesus is available on that level. I don't think a lot of people take him at that level, but that's where you want to be. That's where he becomes your everything. And stuff in life doesn't always make sense. We all know that. But he can become the love of your life. Today is fall in love stuff. No doubt about it. Serious. There's no way to get around that. I lost some sleep last night over thinking about this message. And Jesus himself today, you're going to see, is going after your heart. And it's as if he's saying, choose me over the world. So there's some tunnel of chaos in this message today, as you'll see. So I just want to prepare you well and get you all excited about what's coming. So the truth is, money, which we don't talk about a lot here, we will today because Jesus does, money can destroy things. It just can. Number one there in your notes, money can produce tension. You think? You feel a little bit of it right now. Where is Jim going today? Well, just wait. Buckle up. But money produces more conflict pretty much than anything else, if we get honest about it. Harsh words certainly are difficult to take and put up with, but money is one of those funny things. In marriage counseling, anybody that counsels difficult, challenging marriages know that it's generally one of two things. It's either sex or money. Sex or money. Somebody comes in and you sort of in your mind say, do you have problems in the area of sex or money? I mean, it's just kind of normal that way. That doesn't mean there can't be other issues, but if you get those two down and they stay fresh and full and complete, you can get through pretty much everything. And the guys in the room are smiling because they understand that, all right? You can generally stay together if you get those two down. Not that I'm here starting marriage coaching early, okay? Not doing any of that. As a matter of fact, my daughters will not come. We had a discussion with Jamie and Tracy yesterday, and they will not be here tomorrow night, they announced, because Dad might talk about the three-letter word, S-E-X, sex. And I already did this morning, and Tracy was right back there, and she really appreciated that. So verse 13, while he was speaking to this huge crowd that we established last week, he's still talking. And someone, we don't know who it is, could be anybody, in the crowd, massive crowd, remember, tens of thousands of people, this is enormous, blurted out, interrupted him, and said, teacher, a title of respect, really literally calling him rabbi. So it's a good word on the front end. He said, teacher, tell my brother to divide my inheritance with me. And the question puts the brother in the crowd. He may have been pointing to him. Tell my brother, him, right there. There's tons of people. And this guy blurts this out. And in the Jewish culture, this would not be abnormal. This would be normal. He wouldn't be a rebel for this. If you blurted something out right now, you know, there may be three guys that would carry you out. You know, I mean, not really, unless you were rude and continued. But, and I wonder what three would be. Raise your hand. No, I'm just kidding. You ain't going to do that. But that was normal for them, all right? So it puts this question puts his brother in the crowd, and he was attempting to get Jesus to convince his brother of something that was important to him. And maybe their father had died, and there was an inheritance to be split up, and he was taking his time. He wasn't doing it fast enough. We don't know all the details, but this was the question. And the question is curious, with the setting in mind. There's timing for everything, but in part because of what Jesus had just been saying, and you'll remember it from last week. We get this kind of Jesus overview where he preaches to be careful, be on guard. Watch out for what can take you out, right? Be careful of hypocrisy. You're accountable for everything. God sees everything. He's NSA on steroids, right? We talked about that last week. Wise people fear God, not people. They live different. The fact that you're incredibly valuable, the megaphone to the ear, you remember last week. Acknowledging him is all you have to do, right? Don't worry, trust God, and he'll help you. We talked about all those things and more. This brother in the crowd, he was eager to fulfill his own selfish desires, driven by his desire for money from his inheritance. Not really interested in what Jesus had been saying or what great things that Jesus had laid out. Could he have come up with a better question based on what Jesus had just said and not this one that was sort of out of the blue, had selfish intentions to it? And I thought about this for a moment. That's what I do during the week, to think, how can I really mess with your brain? And we do this sometimes. We do this sometimes in our own way. And you say, what are you talking about, Jim? Well, sometimes we only want to hear what we want to hear, even from the Bible, even in this kind of setting. You guys trust me. You love me. You know I've got your best interests in mind. But sometimes you hear something, you go, I don't like that. And I say, blame God, not me. But that's okay. We don't always want to hear the truth. We don't want to always hear the promises that matter most. We've got our own agenda oftentimes when we come to God. We don't want to hear about the love relationship that's offered when we don't feel loved or we feel life is so difficult. We don't want to hear the challenges that we desperately need if it's not timely and we're kind of in a good place. We can be like this fellow. One thing we do learn from this question, number two there in your notes, is don't use Jesus to get what you want. Don't use Jesus to get what you want. You say, you know, I'd never do that. Oh, okay. I would never power someone with Jesus. I'd never do that. I'd never use Jesus in a selfish way in my prayer life. I'd never manipulate Jesus to get my way. I would never try to hustle Jesus by making a deal with him. In other words, if you do this, I'll do that. Or if you do this, I'll never do that. Or if you do this, I'll stop doing that. We'd never do that. Just some thoughts. There's probably people in other churches, not us. Responding to the brother's public question or comments in verse 14, Jesus replied, and he does this in a public way. He says, man. And the word man, he's kind of cool. Hey, man. Dude. You know, no, it really, this was the term mister or saying sir to this fella with great respect. And just in my simple thinking, my youth pastor mind, it would have blown the guy away if Jesus would have called him by his name because he's God and he knew his name, but he said, sir, mister, man, and probably looked at him as he was answering his question and answering it to the crowd. But just imagine if he would have gone, John, Bill, Steve, whatever his name was. Guy would have loved to see the look on his face if Jesus would have done that. Because if I was Jesus, I'd mess with people. I really would. He was much more respectful than me. But But by the way, just for fun, Jesus knows your name. And he knows your middle name. He knows every part of you. For us guys in the room, he knows how many hairs we have on our head and how many hairs we had on our head in high school. He knows everything. That's kind of cool. So he could have done it, but he didn't do it. So we'll leave that alone. But he replies, he says, "Man, who appointed me a judge or arbitrator between the two of you?" And what he's saying here, and this can bring freedom to your life if you let it. It's not my job. We so often, especially some of us with certain personalities, take things on as a job that aren't our job. He just says, "Kind of forget you. It's not my job. I'm going to work hard at what I do, not what I don't do." Jesus grabbed this teaching opportunity to teach on the issue of greed based on what he asked in a public way, to warn them concerning greed, as you'll see in the body of the message and what Jesus said. Jesus is clarifying here what he came for. He came to bring men to God, not property to men. That's not what he's about. Don't use Jesus to try to get what you want. It won't work, and it's inappropriate. Number three, refuse to believe that money equals fulfillment. This is a lie we often believe, and if you get real honest in your heart and in your mind, it's a lie you've believed, and maybe still do at least minimally today, that money, if I had enough money, or I had more money, or I had twice the money, or twice the income, I'd be really happy. It would be hard to deny for most of us humans that we don't think that way. It would be hard if we're honest. And the truth is, we believe lies in many different areas in our life. The lies that we believe affect us negatively, they hinder our growth, they produce doubt in our life, and they keep people trapped in falsehood when we believe things that are not true. And so you say, "Okay, Jim, what are some of these lies?" Well, I asked 10 of my trusted friends. Half of them were female and half of them were male. And this is the list they compiled, and it really is pretty amazing. We're just going to walk through it for fun. Don't read ahead. I'm just going to walk you through it. We're not in any rush. We're just having fun, missing the soccer game, okay? Lies we often believe, that money equals fulfillment. Now, that's my only addition. The rest of this is all my friends. That you can be happy without God. Good luck with that. That I'm the only one this is happening to. Really? You really think that? It's not true. God doesn't care about me. Never true. Never true. I won't get caught. No one will find out. We talked about that last week. It could never happen to me. Yes, it could. Good people go to heaven. This is a lie that the world believes, and it just isn't true. It's not true. Good people don't go to heaven. People that believe in Jesus go to heaven. I can handle it. I'm in control. Oh, okay. There's no such thing as hell or the devil. Jesus disproved that last week. And the Bible tells us over and over, it's true. What do you believe? You or the Bible? The world or the Bible? I've earned everything I have. Oh, really? Really? Everything? Everything? You think I'm done? Nah, I'm not done. No one will know. Oh, good luck with that. There is no truth. It's all relative. No truth. No absolute truth. You believe the lie that science proves evolution is true. It just isn't true, and our kids are growing up with this stuff. This is what they learn over and over and over again. Are you guys reading ahead, you Bay Cities people? We're going to get there. Faith is for weak people, the opium of the masses, that my spouse is supposed to make me happy. You will not hear that in marriage coaching. I want you to know. That if you raise kids right, they'll turn out right. It is no guarantee, folks. It is up to them. They have their own heart, their own decision-making capacity. Just because you raise them right doesn't mean they turn out right. God's not answering my prayers. Therefore, I must be doing something wrong. No, you aren't. Maybe he's just not. He's saying no. Natural disasters prove that God doesn't care, that God doesn't exist. God can't love me. Look at my background. Look at my background. How could he ever love me? Faith alone can't be enough to be accepted by God. Yes, it is. That's what he says. If I just have a little more blank, you fill in the space, then I'll be happy. At that point, I'll be happy. I'm too screwed up to go to church. I've got to get right first, then I'll go. Yeah, that's what, we're a hospital for sick people. You're all sick, that's why you're here, okay? Deal with it. I need to have what some other person has to be successful, to be happy, to be desirable. If you buy into that lie, you just destroy your life. I'm too much and I'm not enough. Shauna gave us that one. I'm either too much of this or I'm not enough of that. People are just sometimes traumatized by that. All paths lead to heaven as long as you're sincere. No, they don't. No, they don't. You can believe that all you want. It's not true. We can't please God. Yes, you can. Having sex before marriage won't make a difference in your marriage. Yes, it will. People can live through it. But we live in a culture that says have sex every opportunity you get. You make life more difficult. That I can be honest with myself without God. No, you can't. He's the one that'll tell you the truth. He who dies with the most stuff wins. We've heard that a lot. It's not true. I can't have fun following Jesus. Thank you, Ben Bruno. Yes, you can. Yes, you can. I'm too old or set my ways to change. Again, Ben Bruno, and he is really old. And I'm the same age, and it bothers me. It's all about luck. Luck is what you make it. We have all the time in the world, written by a man who struggled with cancer for years and has to live concerned about it. You don't have all the time in the world. If you got it, flaunt it. Okay, Mr. Trump. Nice guys finish last. No, they don't. That's not true. If we do everything right, nothing bad will happen. Just a lie out of the pit of hell. Look out for number one. Oh, that makes for a lot of friendships. A little lie never hurt anyone. Yeah, it does, because they generally turn into bigger lies. When you die and nothing more. No, it's just not true. It's not true. My daddy raised me. When you're dead, so you might as well have fun. My whole life growing up, Jesus changed all that. People who believe in God are weak-minded. They look at it a little bit like a crutch. God can't possibly use me. I'm too blank. You fill in the blank. Why do we do that? Why would we ever believe that? There's no right or wrong way to live. Yes, there is. Yes, there is. More is better. Really? Really? Sounds good. It's not true. More isn't bad, but it's not always better. God's blessings manifest in material things. So if God's blessing me, I got to have some stuff. I've got to have a lot of stuff. If I had more, I would help more. This is not the truth. The check you need to write is bigger, and it's hard to write big checks. I don't care how much you got. It's really hard. I can honor God best when I'm well off or successful. It's just not true. It's not true. Those are lies we can believe, and when we do, I'm sure some of you took notes and got all that down. But Sandy's going to put that on the website if it has any interest to you this week. Luke 12:15. Then he said to them. Them takes in the entire crowd. He said, watch out, be on your guard. So watch out for what can take you out. Same thing as he did last week. You're going to find in this chapter a number of warnings and challenges. He wants to protect us. He's trying to lead us if we have ears to hear. He says, watch out, be on your guard against all kinds of greed or covetousness, you know what I'm saying, being covetous. An intense desire, what it means, for riches. A desire to have more than others. He says, be on guard, guard against all kinds of greeds. It can come from a number of different places. The wisest man who ever lived, it's not in your notes, but he said this in Ecclesiastes 5:10. He says, whoever loves money, nothing wrong with money. Money can be used for great things. Whoever loves money never has enough. Whoever loves wealth is never satisfied with their income. They always want more. That's not a good place to live. Greed defined as an overwhelming desire to have more of something, especially money. More than is actually needed. It's a fascinating thing. Greed is destructive to your life. Greed is a form of idolatry. Greed is focusing your life on the acquisition of things. Greed is what stands in the way of a satisfying life, God would say, over and over again in the book of Proverbs. Jesus goes on to say in verse 15, he talks about life. And this life is not just our biological life. It certainly is that, but it's more than that. It's about a meaningful life, a purposeful life, a life that's fulfilled, that's satisfying, that's full of peace. He says life does not consist of an abundance of possessions. Jesus is trying to break through for you here and for me. Abundance means to exceed or surpass, to have more than enough, to overflow. Possessions means property, wealth, things, anything you might own, whatever it is. Bless you. So Jesus tells us, be careful, Jim. Be careful, every man, woman, and child in this room, of what greed can do to you, of where greed could lead you, of what the end result could be. That's what you're going to see today. Jesus is trying to lead us, to protect us, to educate us on what's true. Jesus tells us, refuse to believe that money equals fulfillment. Throw that in the trash can and dump it. Life experience and Jesus clearly tells us, number four there in your notes, that life and work can bring financial blessing. He lays that out. He goes on to tell a story, as he often did, a parable, if you will, to illustrate the foolishness of looking for fulfillment in riches, success, and more stuff. He's trying to teach us something if we're willing to listen. In verse 16, and he told them a parable, nothing new here, he does this often. The ground, he talks about, the land that the owner owned and farmed of a certain rich man. Now notice this guy, please take note of this before we jump into the story. This guy was already rich. He was well-to-do, had worked hard and been blessed by God in his life. He was a rich man already. He says, a certain rich man yield an abundant harvest. Now, there's no mention of any wrongdoing or dishonesty. It was just a really, really good year. And this can happen in the life of people. They have a really outstanding year. And what we're going to see in this story is like the man who interrupted Jesus with the inheritance issue. The man in this story is consumed with money, with the pursuit of riches, with taking care of himself, as you'll see in the story. Jesus tells us, number five there in your notes, be cautious. Be cautious following my own thinking. You know how sometimes you think you're really right when you're going to make a decision? He just says, be careful. The truth is, for farmers back then, and today as well, more minimally, because we have different capacities, but they depended on circumstances outside of their control, like rain and sunshine and no famine and no great disasters happening. My friend sent me a photo. I should have brought it. It's on my phone, doggone it. He has 1,000 acres of oranges and lemons up in Orosi, one of our best friends. They have 5 kids, and they have 12 grandkids, 13, and we only have 12, and it just irritates me. But he knows we're going to win because we have 5, and he's only got 4, and I got a couple still to produce. So, and I have a prolific daughter, so I'm taking Kevin and Ann out. If you watch this, you'll know that. So I don't know why I just told you that. But there was such a freeze over. Remember when it was so cold in January, I think it was, maybe December, and he sent me 4 pics of his oranges just with frost on the trees, and he thought he lost his whole crop, and he didn't. This can happen today as it could back then. So having this bountiful harvest is a part God thing. And everybody that works the land understands that more than us. But rather than be grateful for what God had provided, he starts considering his options. He starts thinking. And be careful when you start thinking. All right? Verse 17, he thought to himself, he began to reason with himself, what shall I do with this huge harvest? It presented a dilemma. Now, we had this problem the last 3 weeks with plums. We had a dilemma. They were falling on the ground. They were ripe, and they're messy, and we couldn't store them. And it doesn't matter. I'm just teasing with you. But it was a problem. I have no place to store my crops, he says. So no more room. Another dilemma. If he took the crop to harvest to the market, the prices would go down. So he wouldn't make as much money. And every farmer kind of understands that. They play a game with that stuff, when they pick and all that. Verse 18, then he said, after thinking about things, this is what I'll do. This is my action plan. Many of us have come up with different action plans to try to succeed in life. Nothing wrong with that. I will tear down my barns and I'll build bigger ones. Now here starts the problem. Why is he tearing down his barns? Well, he's a businessman. He's tearing down his little barns and he's going to build bigger barns because he doesn't want to just add to the barns he has, because his point is he doesn't want to give up harvesting land. This guy was a penny pincher. He was a businessman. He had to tear them down and did not build additional ones. He wanted to build some really big, gnarly ones. You see it right there? That's a picture of it, by the way. Just kidding if you're new with us. And there he says, I will store my surplus grain. I'll have greater storage capacity. Well, makes sense. Verse 19, and I'll say to myself, self, you do this, I do this, self. You have plenty of grain laid up for many years. You've arrived. You're special. It's over. Take life easy. Eat, drink, and be merry. Just live life for you now. You're there. Don't look for opportunities to give back. Don't try to help your family. Don't try to help others. Just kind of, it's all yours now. You earned it. Live it out. Now, why is it a question I ask? I'm not going to give you the answer, but I want to pose it in your brain. Why is it that humans often want an easy life? They don't want to work. Why is that? Who wants to watch TV in the daytime? Really? Are you kidding me? Why? What are you going to do? Read a book? Read another book? Play golf 5 days a week? Are you kidding me? Retirement sounds frightening to me. I want to be here. I like the idea of semi-retirement, but that's another thing, all right? Why is it that humans often want an easy life? Or they want more than they need? What is it about us? What was it about the children of Israel when God says, I'll give you manna every day. You'll have enough. You'll never go hungry. But they started secretly storing it. What is it about us? Jesus wants us to consider what we're living for. Number 6 there in your notes. Don't be a fool. Live with legacy in mind. This is when he gets pointed, and I think dramatic and beautiful in some ways. You never know what life's going to throw at you. You just don't. And this story takes an unexpected twist, and pretty quickly, as you'll see, just when the man thought he was set for life, God takes his life. The end of his life happens, as it will for us one day. And I hope it's far, far away. In verse 20, but God said to him, in the midst of his reasoning in this parable, you fool. Now, fool represents someone who is mindless spiritually, who's ignorant spiritually, without knowledge of the truth. So you can be very bright, very educated, and be a fool. And we've heard people do that, where they talk some kind of gibberish, and it sounds real smart, and it may make academic sense, but you go, you got a problem, dude. You're messed up. And they think they're right. It's fascinating. I should have brought a couple of clips. It would have been easy to find. But he says to him, he says, this very night your life will be demanded from you. Now, this is stunning. God tells him before he dies, tonight, you're done. So what's rushing through this fellow's mind? I'm not going to make the morning. I'm not making it. God told him. And this is stunning. This is dramatic. He goes on to say, then you will get what you prepared for yourself. Now, in this fellow's mind, you can't go back and fix what you didn't do. You can't go back and reinvest who you were or do it real quick before tomorrow morning comes. This man had foolishly forgotten God in his life. He had left God out of his plans in life. And most of the people we live around are living just this way. We're unique being willing to sit in this room and listen to this kind of stuff and at least consider it for our lives and our homes. We are unique. And part of what he's saying is live your life with legacy in mind. Now, to illustrate this week, LeBron James decided to go home after spending 4 years in Miami and winning 2 rings, and he decided to go back home to Cleveland. And he wrote this beautiful essay. You may want to read it. I'm just going to read a little snippet of it where he wrote this. He said, this is not about the roster or the organization, the team he's going to join. I feel my calling here goes above basketball. I have a responsibility to lead in more ways than one, and I take that very seriously. He says, my presence can make a difference in Miami, but I think it can mean more where I'm from. I want kids in Northeast Ohio, like the hundreds of Akron third graders I support through my foundation, to realize that there's no better place to grow up. I love where I grew up. Maybe some of them will come back home after college and start a family or open a business. That would make me smile. Our community, which has struggled so much, needs all the talent it can get. I'm ready to accept the challenge. I'm coming home. Now, that's legacy thinking. Now, not on a spiritual level. It's not God stuff. I don't know his spiritual life. I have no idea. But it's legacy living. Now, I don't know what legacy living looks like for you. But I do know that God is calling you to do something in your life, to participate. He wants you to be engaged. It's part of why this story's coming at you. From Jesus. Number seven and last, the real issue Jesus is getting at is where we invest matters now and later. It matters for eternity. Investing now is generally a very private matter, right? I mean, we don't talk much about money. It's a little bit like going to the doctor. There are some certain procedures you wouldn't want done in the waiting room, especially as men get older. You just wouldn't want that one done, you know? And money is a little bit like that, if we get honest here. You only talk about it in general terms. There's no definition. That's not what Jesus does here. He gets real defined. And I'm trying to follow his lead and be practical and reasonable. Verse 21 in Luke 12, this is how it will be. So here he takes this and turns this on all of them and the crowd and us today. This will be your future as well, like the guy who wasn't set up well for his death. With whoever, anybody who stores up things for themselves, like money, their life and money is all about them. What they want, what they can accumulate. That stores up things for themselves, in contrast, but is not rich towards God. In other words, God can't be found in their checkbooks or in their hearts. He can't be found. What would God find if he opened your checkbook for the last 3-4 years? What would he find? What have you given to him? And sadly, the truth is, I'll never forget a guy. It's about 12 years ago. We send out a yearly statement. I can't believe I'm saying this. I did not say this at the first service, so feel privileged. Wait till you hear it, though. He's a good friend. I say it to him all the time. We talk every year because he lives elsewhere. But he came a week afterwards. It was in January, and he got his statement. He says, Jim, I need to tell you something. He says, our giving record was pathetic. And he goes, I'm sorry. He goes, we're going to make it right this year. I said, no, don't sweat it. Just start giving a little. Just start writing a check regularly. But he said the word pathetic. I didn't say, you know, dude, you're right. I know that. I don't know what he gave. I would have never known. I thought he was giving a lot. Just kidding. This will be part of the story of everyone who focuses their life on things here instead of storing up things in heaven. That's what Jesus says, and this is very, very serious. Look what Matthew says. He says in verse 19, do not store up for yourselves treasures on earth, where moth and rust and thieves break in and steal. But in contrast, verse 20, store up for yourselves treasure in heaven, where moth and rust and thieves can't steal. It's the work of God going forward. Verse 21, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. Guaranteed. Whatever you treasure, your heart's going to be there. This is why I keep pushing you to fall in love with Jesus. When he becomes a treasure in your life, your heart follows. And you get back gold, not silver. Verse 24, no one, not one person, guaranteed by God, no one can serve two masters. You cannot do it. Either you will hate the one and love the other, or you will be devoted to the one and despise the other. You cannot serve both God and money. Nobody can. And we got to listen to these warnings. It's just true for you and for me. The location of a person's treasure reveals the condition of their heart. It reveals if they have love for themselves and possessions or love for God. It reveals whether they worship God or look for fulfillment on this earth. It reveals what they care about most, the possessions they have on earth or their investment in heaven. So the answer to foolish materialistic greed is to use whatever God has given you, at least part, to honor God and benefit others. That's what he says. Now, this, what I'm going to do right now, is very dangerous. I have never done this before. I don't really know how well it's going to go today. I haven't heard two. I did it once. But I want you to understand what Jesus is talking about. So I'm assuming I'm among friends. So let's start, Justin. This is what Jesus teaches. Let's say, for instance, let's say you make $100,000 a year. Now, notice the word net. It's kind of cool. After taxes, all right? Just for fun for the guys in the room. Not that you girls don't care. I don't mean that. Let's say you make $100,000 a year and you decide, I'm going to give 10% to God. So you're going to give $10,000 a year. You're going to give $833 a month. That's a big fatty check. Huh. Lost one. So let's say you give 5% to God. It's $5,000 a year, $416 a month. Still a pretty fatty check. for reasonable people. That's a car payment. That's a BMW right there. Just for fun. Let's say you decide, I want to give 2% to God. It's $2,000 a year, $166 a month. Now, here's the beautiful picture, at least to me. This is what investment in God and his work is all about. Let's say you did this for 20 years. What does it look like? What does it look like? $10,000 is $200,000. That's an IRA right there, folks. Some of us don't even have that much set aside. And that's invested with God. $5,000 a year, $100,000, $40,000. Now, what if you do that for 40 years? And I know the numbers aren't static. That's a lot of money given to God's work. And if you've got that kind of track record for 10, 20, 30, 40 years, how do you think you feel about that? How much do you think the enjoyment of entering heaven saying, you know, I have participated? You see, the way you break the back of greed in your life is you give a chunk. You don't give it all. God never asked for it all. You just give a chunk. And you're not afraid to give a chunk over and over and over again. I'm not saying it's easy. I am not here saying it's easy. But this is what Jesus is talking about. And if you choose not to do it, I'm just telling you, you put yourself in a danger zone. Do I need to go up front? You're all looking at me. All right, okay, all right. There are people in this room that cannot believe that screen is up there. And really, in truth, neither do I. I lost one guy to it. If you're new with us, I'm so sorry. We never do this kind of stuff, but this is what he's teaching us. You got to make real choices, and I know this is hard. I understand it is, and I'm not trying to say it isn't. And what do we learn? Number one, greed can happen in different ways. It's not just about how much you have or how much you want. It can be about how you view others that are more successful than you, not just with money, but with blessing in life. Sandy and I have learned with kindness to hush oftentimes about our 12th grandkid being, because I've met grandmas that don't have one and they cry over it. And we hush ourselves. I mean, I brag sometimes, I think too often. I got four daughters and they're all married. Oh! What if somebody has two or three and they aren't married? I'm not trying to pick on anybody, but people can get mad at me. It happens in life. I get it. I am excited they're all married, though. I just want you to know for a lot of reasons. What do you do with the good things that happen to somebody else? What do? You can be greedy and not have a lot. You know that. Number two, life never has been about stuff. Jesus is telling us this loud and clear in this message. Life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. Memorize that verse. Put it on your mirror and start living like that. And believe it. It's true. Use stuff. Enjoy stuff. But don't live for stuff. Do not live for stuff. Number three, my legacy is my choice. From this day forth, you can't say Jesus didn't tell you, all of you that are in the room. If you ditched today and you were watching soccer and decided not to come to church, you could say that, but you can't say that. You're stuck. Jesus has told you what matters, what you ought to pursue, where real success lies. Number four, I can invest different if I listen. This is what Jesus was trying to tell all those folks, the tens of thousands and us today. And the question I have, you know, I always pose these questions. I don't really have the answer. Did they listen? Did they listen to his parable? A bigger question is, are we willing to listen? Really? And be different. You could take a step in this direction. Make it 1%. It doesn't, the amount, God doesn't need your money. You need to invest with him. I was talking to some gals in the back that have been here for a long time. They said, thank you so much. I couldn't believe they said that after this message. I said, just write a big fatty check, because they can. I said, write a fatty one, a $500 one, a $1,000 one. I said, it's really hard to do the first time. But the joy you get back will stun you. Now, don't write it if you don't have it. I don't want it bounced. These ladies could. But listen to me. There's a principle here. To break free from whatever greed, they both looked at me and they go, we're greedy. I know we are. And they're some of the nicest ladies I know. And I go, I know, so am I. I work on it all the time. You know, part of being free is to admit something about yourself. Take a step in the direction, whatever you can. Nobody's going to know. I'm never going to know. And watch what happens to your heart. This is about you. Watch what happens to your heart. Since we've been in the danger zone all day, obviously, talking about money, we might as well end with a splash, I figured. And what are you going to do with the bucket you got that God has blessed you with? The life, the capacity, the ability. What are you going to do with that? No matter how full that bucket is, by the way. Enjoy, and then I'll pray.
Imagine this bucket of water is your financial situation. Each one of us will face different choices concerning our finances throughout our lives. Some of us may be struggling to keep our heads above water as we face debt at every turn. Others may be right on the line with no margin for error. And still others may have even managed to put some money into savings. Oftentimes, we allow these financial situations to order our giving for us. We give when we have plenty and hold back when times are tough. The book of Proverbs gives us a powerful truth when we view our giving based upon our bank statements. Proverbs 11:24 says that if we withhold what we should give, we will only suffer more want. Our first inclination when we hear this is to say that it cannot be true. That if we hang on to all our money, we will have that much more money to pay our bills. But the Bible doesn't concede this point. In fact, it tells us that only when we give freely, not hoarding our money, will we grow richer. By giving, we will end up with plenty, and if we try and keep it all, we end up not having what we need. What a paradox, and what a powerful motivation to give at the same time. Do you trust this promise? Do you believe that God rewards those who give in any circumstance? This is the one area where God tells us to test Him, and it's the one area very few of us actually do. We test His mercy as we run off like the prodigal son, only to find that He welcomes us back with open arms when we repent. And we are willing to test His patience with our habitual sins, again to find that He is slow to anger. So why not test His generosity and see if He does not fulfill our every need just as He promises?
You know, before I pray, I was talking to these ladies back there. I said, what if somebody gave me $5 million or $10 million? Really, today, what would I do? And she said, I just kind of left that, you know, that blank dead air. They said, what would you do? I said, well, there'd be a two-story building built right here on that part for three or four more children's rooms and a couple of big rooms up top. I said, this building would blow out about 30 feet and be a little bit bigger, and there would immediately be air conditioning in this building. And I said, and if it really happened, there'd be a gymnasium out here, and the whole city could use it at times, along with there'd be some grapefruit trees. Do you follow what I mean? No, now, nobody's going to give me $5 million. I get that. But when we talk about God's work and investing in it, look what He's already done for us. I mean, come on, Jim, are you greedy? Well, I told you I was. But just start. If not here, somewhere. Let's pray as we close. Father, thank You that we can be honest in this room, that we can look to Your words and try to understand. We don't want to be like the guy that built bigger barns. We want to be good businessmen and women in every way that we can. We want to be wise with our money. We want to invest well. We want to have stuff to leave to our kids. But Lord, we never want to leave You out. We never want to leave You out. So lead us, guide us, love us, be tender with us. But we will never shirk, Lord, from hearing the truth and trying to understand it. We pray this in Jesus' name. And everybody said, go Germany, Argentina, for Lisa. Yeah, okay, good.